This episode is sponsored by Natural Mat, an organic bed and mattress company based on the banks of the River Exe in Devon. Natural Mat controls the whole process of making, from collecting organic wool to sending out the finished product in its own vans. You can visit a Natural Mat showroom in the Cotswolds, Chiswick or Devon, or log on to naturalmat.co.uk.
One of the things that makes my designs unique is that fact that everything is from a real experience. And I think that's what I'm trying to do in drawing the designs, is capture some of that magic from what I've seen and what I've experienced in nature.
Welcome to House Guest with me, Carol Annett, interiors editor at Country and Townhouse magazine. Here I chat to those clever creatives behind the houses, hotels and brands you see in glossy magazines like ours. Guests including interior designers and architects, as well as celebrities dipping their toe into the world of decorating. Today I am in Shoreditch with the lovely Emma J. Shipley. Thank you for allowing us to come and visit you, Emma. It's really kind.
Thank you very much for having me. I'm really excited.
So your homeware and accessories take you on an adventure to uncharted lands. They're lands filled with curious creatures, myths and legends. There's a dreamlike quality to your homeware, beautiful mythical creatures and birds. And I mean, we're sitting amongst it now.
Yes.
And lots of colour. So were you always a dreamer?
I would say yes. Yeah, I definitely always had a strong imagination as a child. And I always loved reading like fantasy books, fantasy films. And I had all those kind of things going on from when I was young, I think, that was really taken by. And it's as I've grown older, obviously, and started channeling those into my designs that I kind of started to develop my unique style.
So you trained as a graphic artist.
I trained in textile design at the Royal College of Art, but I was really focused on the drawing side of it and kind of pushing my drawing skills and my imagination within that as far as I could.
Because they are they're incredibly detailed drawings. What did you start with? Was it fabrics or was it ceramics?
I started with fabrics, but I would always start with drawing on paper, in pencil, or in, you know, or painting or drawing with other media as a starting point before then translating them into fabric or textile, other kind of textiles.
And it's kind of safe to say it's gone pretty well, really, hasn't it?
Yeah. I mean, I really enjoy it, so I'm very happy to have kind of managed to build a business from just that starting point of having my own personal viewpoint on design and my own handwriting and this sort of style that I, as I say, I developed at the Royal College of Art, which people I could see were really drawn to. So I'm really pleased that I've managed to turn that into a business.
So it's mostly birds and mythical creatures, lions and zebras. And so do you start, how does it start? Do you go and travel somewhere and take photographs? Do you look at books? Is it film?
Yeah, so I try and always start with a trip, if I can, an inspiration trip. Ideally, you know, somewhere full of wildlife, really remote, somewhere that's going to really inspire me and that I can also, you know, when you physically visit somewhere, for example, some of the places I've been in Africa, there's a certain feeling that you get that you're never going to get from books or watching a documentary or something. And it's that kind of feeling of, you know, like the magic of Africa that I feel I try and then capture in my designs. But in doing so, I then always bring in these other references to make it more, you know, me, I guess, and make it more unique, and bring other elements into it that I feel are interesting or relevant to me at the time. So that's when I might bring in like fantasy films, literature, could be other artists like, you know, painters, or I love artists like William Blake, or could be David Hockney, looking at his incredible colour palettes. So all those kind of things I will then mix with my own photography or sketches that I've done while I'm travelling, and then try and find some common threads within the inspiration and start bringing them together into a design.
And have you always travelled?
Not really when I was younger, not when I was a child growing up, but I did when I was at school. There was an opportunity to go to India. sort of trekked through the Himalayas, and we helped at some schools up in the mountains and helped to build like a greenhouse for these monks so that they would be able to grow vegetables and things. So it was kind of, you know, something to get children into knowing about other cultures and also that social responsibility of like giving back. But that was a very inspirational trip. And I suppose since then, I've always had that itch to keep traveling and kind of exploring different places. But I also had family when I was growing up who had grown up in different countries. Like my dad grew up in South Africa, my grandma grew up in India. Like there would be these incredible stories about the places they grew up, the wildlife, the adventures they had. And that, I think, probably had a big influence on me.
And do you have a place where you draw? I mean, are you able to sort of sit and draw anywhere, or do you have a...
Not really. I draw on big sheets of paper. And of course, like, as you mentioned, the designs are very detailed and very precise. So I have a drawing studio at home that I will have my drawing board and bring together all my inspirations on mood boards, like the one that's behind us, and then just draw from them. But it's good to have a particular place that is my space to draw in.
And how long does it take you to put a piece together that you're happy with?
It might be a course of weeks. I'm also running the business at the same time. So it means, you know, I'm not drawing every day realistically, but I really enjoy the business side as well. So if I can carve out a couple of weeks solid, then I can probably do a design during that time if I've already done all of the research part. So probably a couple of weeks solid drawing. But if I'm working, you know, on the business in between, then it could be a month, 2 months, depends on how much time I can get to sit down at my desk and draw.
And what about the colour? I mean, in your office here, we've got pink wall with a navy and green wallpaper with lions on. We've got a chair, which is a sort of acid lemon with pink and blue. And where do your colour combinations come from?
Yeah, it's interesting. I think it's partly instinctual, the way I work with colour. I kind of do what I feel, but I will also look at, often like it will come from my photography as well, from places I've travelled. But not always. So I might just have an idea in my mind of colours that I want to bring to life. And I kind of just tweak things until I'm really happy with them. And yeah, as I say, looking at painters, the work of different painters might be from medieval times or could be modern day. That's definitely an inspiration to me as well. And you might just see a really interesting combination of two or three colours being put together that you haven't thought of that I sort of store and then might come back to you later. But in general, I'd say it's quite instinctive the way I work with colour.
And what about when you started to sell, and it's mostly now, it's online obviously, and Harrods is the main place where people find you. But you've also got a really loyal gathering of people, which I think is quite fascinating. There's obviously something that people are drawn to, and you have... Are they called the menagerie, the pack that follow you?
I love the menagerie. yes, it's kind of our community. And yeah, I think that has been something that I've seen from the beginning, which is partly what kind of gave me the confidence to start the business, or at least, you know, try and grow the business, because I could see that people's reaction to the designs and the products, obviously it doesn't appeal to everyone, but for the right people, they really, really love it, and they have a really strong emotional connection to the designs and to the pieces that they kind of collect. So that to me is really powerful. And we even have now like a Facebook group that's this kind of, not secret, but a sort of special little group that's called Fans in the Wild, Emma J. Shipley Fans in the Wild. And that's really lovely because it's a real community feel, and people within the group will also ask the rest of the group's opinion on if they're choosing, you know, one of our wallpapers and what paint should they put with it, and they post photos of their interiors and things they're planning or things they've done. And it's a really lovely supportive atmosphere, and it kind of is all built around their love of the designs. So that's really, really special. And we do have some really fantastic loyal customers who, as I say, I think they just have this really, really strong emotional connection to like the way that the designs make them feel and the way the products make them feel. And that's really strong.
And do you think that's an escapism? Do you think it's a kind of, you know, where we've been, we've all been in, I want to say, you know, dark times, but difficult times, living at home and being in a space, you know, and that sort of plain white china is just not hitting it anymore.
No, it doesn't do it for me anyway. Yeah, definitely. I think the comments I often get is that it makes people feel really inspired, or it kind of sparks their imagination, which I think is lovely. And the other thing is, I think because lots of the references I take are from things that are more from childhood. And so there's like a childlike imaginative quality to them, while the designs themselves are still, I would say, sophisticated.
Yeah, they're definitely not.
There's an opportunity to, for people who enjoy them, to really kind of engage with their inner child and those things that, you know, I loved as a child growing up, and fantasy, like Lord of the Rings and Chronicles of Narnia and stuff like that. Like those kind of feelings of magic, I kind of try and imbue the designs with. So I think people really connect with that, and it brings out that feeling of like the magic of childhood and their inner child.
And once you start finding a market and seeing who's buying your products, do you then have to be quite careful about staying true to yourself and not designing for that person, if you see what I mean? I can imagine that's difficult.
I do try and make sure I stick to my own inspiration and really what I want to do. And I think that is important in any time anyone's wanting to create original work. You can't be too influenced by what other people want because they don't really know it until they see it. So, you know, it's kind of the same with colour palettes as well. As you say, perhaps if you talked about the colours, they wouldn't sound like they were going to work. But when you see it, they do. So I think there's an element of making sure I just stay true to myself and things that I'm really inspired by, and hopefully people will like it. So.
And what about moving forward? How many collections have you had so far?
Oh my goodness. Well, I launched really in 2012, so about 10 years ago, but I was really doing just scarves at that time. So I launched my graduate collection with silk scarves, wool scarves, and they were bought by Browns on South Molton Street.
That must have been so exciting.
Yeah, it was amazing. So they bought the whole graduate collection, and then I started producing them. I was making everything in England at that time. We make our scarves in Italy now. But that was a really exciting time. And at that point, then I was producing two collections a year, very much in line with the fashion seasons. But then in 2018, I started to branch more into interiors, and launched a collection of cushions with Liberty. And then I launched the collaboration with Clark & Clark on fabric and wallpaper. So that was sort of what really supercharged the business, really, because there's so much more scope compared to something which is quite niche, like a luxury scarf. It opens it up to a much wider audience moving into interiors. And the designs were kind of instantly popular for interiors, which was great.
And what about overseas? Do you have a market in the States, for example?
Yes, we're finding that we've got a very strong market in the US. It's just starting. Well, I say just starting in terms of, obviously, it's such a huge market, so I'm sure we're barely touching the surface. But it's really exciting to see that we are reaching people there, and we see them being really loyal customers. So we see them ordering once from our website, and then I think we offer like a really good service, so they receive it, they love it, and they'll order again and again and again.
I know you've got a new collection coming up. How did that one come about, and can you tell us a little bit about it?
Yes, so I went to Costa Rica for an inspiration trip, and it's an area that really appealed to me because it's known for its biodiversity and for having really large areas of kind of unspoiled landscape and wilderness, if you like. There's also a really rare bird there called the resplendent quetzal. So it's quite a mouthful, but the new design will be called Quetzal, or, you know, in the sort of English accent, a lot of people in the team are calling it quetzal, like pretzel, which I don't think the Costa Ricans would be pleased with. But I sort of go with quetzal.
How do you spell it?
It's Quetzal.
Okay, crikey.
Yeah, so, you know, I'm going with that. I think my menagerie are, you know, of a level that they can cope with some difficult names. So we're going with Quetzal for the new design. And they are an incredibly, incredibly beautiful bird. We had to get up before dawn. I think it was about 4 a.m. in the pitch black, up in a region of cloud forest, which is a sort of any type of rainforest that's at a really high elevation. So where I was, it was over 2,000 metres up. And it's where you get, you know, it's, as the name conjures up, cloud forest, it's all very misty and sort of magical. And all these vines hanging and like succulents and orchids in all, you know, hundreds of them all in the trees. And all these huge sort of rainforest trees as well. But you're really high in the mountains. And these resplendent quetzal birds, they feast on the wild avocados.
Oh my goodness.
The wild avocado trees. So it is like something out of a fairy tale. So I couldn't have really found anything more inspirational and kind of, you know, really to feed my own imagination. But we went out with a guide who really knew his stuff to wait at the wild avocado trees, where they will often come just before dawn and while the sun is rising, before any predators come out to eat these must be delicious, these little wild avocados. And we were waiting. And then all of a sudden we just heard the little call and the guide is like, listen, it's that. I won't try and imitate it now, but I'm sure you can hear it on Google. And then we just suddenly saw this flash of, it's like this bright iridescent green and red. And they have these incredible long tails. The males do. The show offs, obviously. And the
it's
tail,
always the male that gets the response.
Yeah, it is, isn't it? Well, the females are actually very pretty themselves. They have the iridescent green, but they don't have these huge long tails. So the males, you know, it's a relatively small bird, but the tails were about a metre long.
Wow.
And they are sort of, they sort of mainly have, like, I would say, two long parts of long feathers in the tail.
Yeah.
And as they fly, the tail sort of moves almost like a ribbon, and it's just absolutely beautiful. And so we watched them fly to the avocados. They would pick one and then take it, sit on a branch and gulp it down whole, and then they sit there for about 5 minutes while it digests, and then they just like regurgitate out the little stone from the middle. So we saw them do that, and the little stone just pops out of their mouth, and then they go flying off again. And we saw multiple of these quetzal birds, and the females and the males together flying. And I went out on more than one morning, actually, and managed to see them every time. Yeah, so the whole design is based around not only these birds, but other animals that I saw in the cloud forest. And then I've brought in other inspirations as well, as usual. So it will be this fantasy scene in the cloud forest, and hopefully kind of capture a little bit of that magic that I felt when I saw those birds like emerge out of the darkness, and they're these flashes of amazing colour and very, very magical experience.
So how will you ensure that you keep coming up with something new?
Well, I think I've still got lots more places to explore in the world, and wildlife I would love to see. So I think one of the things that makes my designs unique is that fact that everything is from a real experience. And I think that's what I'm trying to do in drawing the designs, is capture some of that magic from what I've seen and what I've experienced in nature. So I think as long as I keep on travelling, then hopefully I'll keep on creating exciting and unique designs.
One of my favourite products are your beautiful candles, because the pot itself is so pretty. And then obviously once you use the candle, you've got a little jar with a lid that you can keep. Tell me about the fragrances and how you sort of came about those.
Yeah, so I love the home fragrance as well, one of my favourites. And it's a collaboration with a London-based company who are really fragrance experts. So we worked on it together. To start with, I went to see them and they had their fragrance library of all the sort of individual scents. And we went through each one in turn and I kind of gave my view on which ones I really gravitated towards. And we also looked at pairing them with each design. So the setting and the feeling and the colours even of each design, we wanted to be reflected in the scents. So whether it's sort of saffron and amber or vetiver and damask rose is another one that's really fantastic. But they all kind of should have a feeling when you smell them that really is in tune with the design on the pot. And as you say, they are a keepsake for life, really. And they are, they're beautiful china. They've got the 24 karat gold detailing and they look amazing. So I've got them, like, once I've used them up, I use them in my bathroom as little storage jars, in the kitchen. You can put sugar in them. You can obviously put a candle in them again as well afterwards. So they're a really special gift as well. So I do love those.
I love that idea of sort of being so in your head as a child and having these sort of amazing fantasies of travel and mystical creatures. You know, you always kind of think, oh, you know, there she goes, dreaming again.
Yeah.
You know? And then look, you know, look what it's turned into.
Yeah, I've managed to make it a job somehow. So I'm delighted.
Yeah, well, it's very exciting and can't wait to see the new collection.
Thank you. I might give you a little sneak peek. Don't tell anyone.
That would be amazing. All right. Thanks so much, Emma. It's been really delightful chatting.
Thank you, Carol.
Sustainability has been at the heart of Natural Matte since day one. This year, they became the first bed and mattress company in the UK to gain B Corp status. They also hold the Queen's Award for Sustainability. Using only certified organic materials, Natural Matte's mattresses are better for you and the planet. Visit naturalmatte.co.uk.
Thank you for joining me today. You can hear more House Guest on British Airways In-Flight Entertainment in the audio section, along with our sister podcast, Breakout Culture, with Lord Ed Vasey and Charlotte Metcalf. You can follow me on Instagram at Carol W. Annett.